no grace for that, huh?
No. Okay, these are the other tests. This is the vocab test. I don't have the other one yet. French.
The non-translation part, I suppose we could. Sometimes there's some judgments have to be made, though. Well, I think we could do it. Would you mind doing that and get a little kind of a feedback on it? I think we can correct the first page of this, and the point values in the first section might be a question about. The second section won't be too bad because it's just a matter of spelling errors. Let's see. Well, we'll go ahead and take a crack at it, too, if we can only do it. I'll just pass these around at random again.
Can't be too much random in this class.
No, there isn't too much. That's a little presentation here. This number one, we've got eight responses here. Everything's worth five. Each one's worth 5 points. And this is the one that we may have a problem with. I think what we'll have to do is if there's something wrong with it, the English there, just circle that portion of it, and then I'll have to decide how many points to take off. I'm not entirely sure exactly which way I want to set it up. So if there's anything wrong, just circle the portion that's wrong. Don't score any points, and I'll go ahead and look at that part. Okay, part number A. Excuse me. Bikshasti, Bikshasni should mean she sought me. She sought me. B should be you, masculine plural, destroyed me. You, masculine plural, destroyed me. You don't have to put down the masculine plural, but that's what it is. If you just said you destroyed me, I'd accept that. C is two possible. Huh? No, don't worry about that. If there's something wrong, just circle it, and I'll have to decide how many points.
There, you caused me to be destroyed.
Oh, you caused me to be destroyed. I can't remember the nature of that. Well, it's a Hifield verb. It just means to destroy. But, yeah, I don't think there'd be any problem there. We'll go ahead and accept that. Okay, C, I observed them or you observed them, masculine plural. I observed them or you observed them. Two possibilities. Either one is all they need. D, you will observe me. You will observe me. Or possibly she will observe me. And because of the imperfect, you know, the 2MS and the 3FS are the same. So either you, masculine singular, will observe me or she will observe me. E, he will destroy him or he will destroy us. Could be either one. He will destroy him or he will destroy us. Yes. Oh, they just said observe instead of destroy. Okay, just circle that part. I probably won't take off as many points for that. They probably just saw the sheen and the name there and just, you know, connected with that. Okay, and then F should be they observed him. Shamaruhu. They observed him. And G, he will seek me. He will seek me. Yeah, circle that. Just circle the word sought, and that will indicate. And then H, observe us. Observe us. It's a command. Observe us. So, anything wrong there, circle it. Okay, on this next section, yeah, question? Yeah, it's imperfect endings, and but the imperative takes imperfect type endings. And you have no prefix, so you can, if you know it's got imperfect endings and has no prefix on it, you know it's got to be imperative. Then even if you didn't remember the vowel points. Okay, now the next section is translated into Hebrew. I'll put these on the board, and as we go, and the spelling is going to be just like this is worth 5 points. Each one's worth 5 points, and but the only way to do this is just to count 1 point for every letter or vowel point that's wrong. So if they get the wrong ending or something, that'll usually mean -2 or -3 or something like that. So each vowel point counts a point, and each letter counts a point up to a maximum of 5 on each one of these. So you can't miss more than 5 if they got the whole thing completely wrong with these 5 off. So just count the number of spelling errors. Vowel points, dagesh counts a half. So dagesh a half, but a vowel point or a letter is a full point up to a maximum of 5. Okay, you masculine plural sought them should be. The dagesh in the cough here. Feel. Okay. The kashtum. And you can put an accent marker there if you wanted, but it's not really necessary. The kashtum. Okay. 1 point off for every letter. Dagesh counts. Now each count is a half point. Then B, we observe him. Okay.
So Esh, Mareka, and you can put his transponder if you want. Esh Mareka. The dots in this one. About all that. Okay. I will observe you, so. You would have been Eshmore, and then you get reducing to Shawan. Okay, they mask him. Plural will seek her.
Questions, anybody? Yeah.
For this one, he had one way or another way. In one way he missed one, and another way he missed two.
Oh, oh my.
How did he do that? I just found a circle, maybe you want one.
Yeah, I'll have to look at it. Just put down, yeah, just circle the errors in both of them, and I'll look at it and judge it.
Okay. Now the last question we can do also, when a clause containing Hayat begins with a narrative sequence, the real nature of the sequence is not known until we reach continuing verb. If the continuing verb is a converted form, how will it be translated? And you should have habitual there, habitual, durative, I suppose even future or modal. Is that the only thing that was said?
Yes, modal.
Okay.
I had put that down because I couldn't remember the word.
I'll have to think about that.
When we talked about the future, the modal sense,
yeah.
What's that?
Right. You've got future forms. I'm pretty sure it'll fit anyway. It's a more broad category. This is more of a restricted one, but I'll look at it and see if it. I'm sure it'll be partial credit, at least. Okay. And If it's a converted imperfect, then you're just going to go with a past or a past narrative or just your normal perfect idea or something, whatever you want there. It's normal perfect or past or historical past or there's lots of options there for how you want to word it. But as long as they've got that idea of a normal perfect sense or normal past sense, punctiliar past, I don't know. You meant some things. Okay, those are worth 5 points each. And you can go ahead and correct that go ahead and score that unless there's problems you're not sure about. On John. The first blank should be habitual, that's probably the best answer, habitual or durative or future, and perhaps modal. I'm gonna think about that, but I'm probably gonna accept that. And then the other one would be past or past narrative or perfect, something like that, past tense. In other words, one of them is describing how things used to be, even kind of a progressive idea or a continuing idea in the past or something would be good for that first one. And then the second one is more of a punctiliar historical narrative of events. Okay. Well, go ahead and pass the paper back to its owner so they can kind of see where they are. And then we can pass them in the front. I'll finish it. That's perhaps about the heart. At least those forms are probably the most difficult that you're going to run into. So, of course, that was our last test. So, see, I've got another old test here for you, John.
We are trying to do something here that would be more difficult than even his vocal language, because we're looking at the grammar. We'll be encouraged, maybe.
Or not discouraged.
Yeah.
Of the test this semester will just be translation right from the text. So the first one we'll have will be on Genesis, and I'm not sure exactly which portions yet, but we'll decide that. Let's see, I guess I didn't pass this yet. So let's resume Genesis chapter 2, and we're down around verse 18, something like that, right at the end of. See, we're just starting verse 18 from what my marker indicates. Let's see. The day that she gave it, she'll die. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Did we cover in that verse 17? Trying to decide whether we did 17 or not. I think we did, yeah. Muth, Tamuth, yeah, I think we did. Remember that. So verse 18 is what's up next. Yeah. Sure.
I was wondering when we were talking about it in Greek today on the first day of the board.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, in Hebrew, can you have a case where the pronoun is in question?
Yes.
Like, example, the one in Daniel where it talks about the he will cut the week in half.
Yeah.
What factors in Hebrew do you choose from the first picture in Hebrew?
Okay, well, there's one factor you have is gender. You know, you have whether the noun that it's referring back to is masculine or feminine. And you only have two genders to worry about instead of three, which might be, I don't know if it's better or worse, but it may be worse in the sense that you may have in a given sentence nouns that are both masculine and feminine have the question as to which one it refers back to. But so you have gender for one, and so the antecedent is going to have to be something masculine if the noun's masculine and vice versa if it's feminine. Then you have singulars and plurals, of course, too. So you'd consider that factor. So you have those concord laws. As far as anything beyond that, and many times, of course, things are masculine singular, and you still can't tell for sure which it's referring back to, and especially in some of those prophetic passages where you're kind of going back and forth between the prophet speaking and speaking about God, and you don't know whether it's God speaking, whether the prophet's speaking, and back and forth. And so you get into some things that you just have to acknowledge that there are some ambiguities, and you're going to have to make some decisions based on the sense of the passage and context and other things as well. Word order itself isn't going to be ultimately the criteria. I suppose it may have a little bit more bearing in Hebrew than it would in Greek, just because Hebrew has a little bit more rigid word order structure. So that may be part of it, you know, looking for proximity, the thing that's closer and so forth. But I wouldn't use that as an absolute criteria. I would use that in addition to other things. Say if it's real ambiguous, you can say, well, this is the most probable because of the word order, maybe, and the feeling, the sense that you get from it. But other than that, you don't have.
Now that the context of being ambiguous, like
in construct, you mean? Is that what you meant? The noun that's in construct. Well, let's see. No, they don't, and they don't have the same genitive kind of construction. You may see that, but I think you're more likely to see, if you do that, some more, a resumptive pronoun type of an idea. I'm trying to think now, with a construct. I couldn't say that there's any intrinsic reason why something in construct couldn't be the antecedent to some pronoun. I'm referring back up to, you know, if it was the will of God and God was in construct and so forth, then it was the will of God, and then he will tell you such and such, or he will save you, he will deliver you, or something, and referring back up to God, there shouldn't be any problem there. Of course, your pronoun is going to be in its own sentence. It's going to probably be a subject position or something like that, and there shouldn't be any problem there. It's very much the same as English in that respect. The construct relationship is very much the same as English as far as the translation, something of something, and you can refer back up to something in that condition. The same is true in Greek. Something in the genitive can easily be the antecedent of a relative pronoun, too. But there wouldn't be any attraction factor, you know, like in Greek sometimes, if something's expected to be an accusative position, and it's, how's it go now? It's expected to be, you get an attraction sometimes with genitive and dative. You sometimes get them attracted to the case of the antecedent in their own sentence, and that's unusual, and you don't see anything like that in Hebrew. So
I always wondered in POD class, they were talking about those verses, and they proved it by using English grammar.
Mm-hmm.
In English, people could not be dancing because it's not a good preposition. I was wondering, is it right to argue from English grammar?
Well, it's not technically, you know, correct to argue from English grammar unless the English grammar reflects the same sense of the Hebrew. And if it reflects the same sense of the Hebrew, then there wouldn't be any problem. And I think what you're really going by is the sense of the meaning of the concept, whether it's in English or in Hebrew. And if we speak English, of course, then we're trying to translate it over. If the translation's accurate, then you know, you have logical considerations. In other words, you're getting into a semantic point now. See, if the issue is not a purely grammatical one, but it's a semantic one, which it appears to be in that case, then the semantic issue can be decided regardless of which language you're dealing with, as long as the translations are correct. But if it's a grammatical rule that's involved, that's indicative of a particular language, then you have to deal with the grammatical rule. In other words, the same kind of thing happens to us here, whether you're in English or in Greek. You don't have a real tight grammatical rule that will nail this thing to something else. So we're having to consider things from a theological standpoint and a semantic standpoint, and that can be true whether you're dealing with English or Greek or Hebrew or any other language. So that's where you have to kind of split hairs sometimes. If it's a logical problem that's independent of the grammatical rules involved, then you have to argue on that basis, and you could argue from English grammar as well as any other language.
Looks like especially in Greek, it's going to be places where it's really going to be hardly dogmatic.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of what you're learning, and you know, part of the knowledge that you've come to is that you need to know where you can't be dogmatic. You know, because, like we say, that's where sometimes you don't have enough Greek to be dangerous. You think you've, you know, the young man knows the rules and the wise old man knows the exceptions, you know. So we want to try to bring ourselves to a maturity in the Greek grammar to the point where we can begin to realize it in some areas. It's not really nailed down. It's not actually nailed down grammatically. So if we know our grammatical rules well, we'll know what things we can say, and then recognize in some instances that this is not tied down as well, and it opens itself to some other possibilities. And then we're forced to look at the theological and internal things to make the final decision. And we have a perfect justification for doing that. In other words, you need to know that you have that justification. So if somebody comes along and says, well, you're all washed up, you know, the Greek says such and such, and they really don't know what they're talking about, you can demonstrate that the Greek could be one of two ways, and the other things have to decide the issue. So that's part of the knowledge that we have. There are ambiguities in Greek, and especially, you know, genitives and how to take those. I think Greek, Hebrew, and English are all ambiguous in those things. As far as something of something, what's the full sense of it? You know, subjective genitives, objective genitives, genitives of kind, you know, lots of things that we're picking up from context more than anything else.
It seems like English is a little more precise. At least it's a little more, there's some possibilities that can't exist in English.
Yeah.
A few more possibilities in English.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the area, too. I would say the whole Greek is more precise than English in many areas. But there are some areas that Greek is not as precise in, and maybe English even more precise in some particular areas. But Hebrew is probably less precise than either of the two in almost all areas.
We feel that way because it's our language, and yeah. We feel very capable of saying something very precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas not being as familiar with the other languages, yeah. We don't know how they say it as precisely as we would.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from just a subjective bias.
Yeah. Sure. One thing that gets us, though, sometimes we may know how to say something precisely and convey what we mean, but somebody else who doesn't have your mind and hears your words may not consider it quite as precise. You know what I mean? And that's why things can be taken out of context easily in English and so forth, too, and twisted to mean something else, even though when we spoke it, we didn't have any question that we were being precise. And you find that out when you try to write a test, theology test at this Bible college. You know, but boy, that was so clear and so precise, and yet they interpreted it a different way. You know, oh my, you know. And now that they say it, I can see why you would interpret it that way. Then you have to change the question, you know, and rewrite the test. Okay. So language is an interesting thing, and it's good to those of you that have had exposure to both Greek and Hebrew as well as English, and maybe some other languages as well. You start to see interesting patterns in these different languages and get a lot more confidence with them. I used to wonder about people who spoke many different languages, you know, how they could keep it all straight. And the more languages you got, I would think it'd be much more confusing. But what I've found, just in the exposure I've had to Spanish and German and English and Greek and Hebrew, there are some areas where you get some mixing up, you know, from time to time perhaps. But by and large, I'm just finding that there's patterns, logical patterns, that are in all the languages, and you begin to learn something about the way we communicate thought from a logic standpoint, even beyond the actual words and means that we use. And different languages have a different way to express something, but within their system it's quite logical. So I think it's interesting. Well, any other questions before we launch into verse 18? Okay, verse 18 then. John, you want to take a starting thing right here? Let's see, are you in the same one I am?
I'm in Genesis 3.
Oh, okay.
Close.
Yeah. I have to think either you have a very interesting pronunciation in this or...
Textual
variance, yeah, right.
I had that one all figured out.
Oh, no. We'll have to make sure you get that one.
Lavado. SS. Flow is there. Negdo.
Okay.
Okay. And now what will he say? It's not good.
Yeah, that's an infinitive for it to be.
Being the being of the man. It's kind of a construct.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The being of the man.
Right.
To, I guess that would mean alone.
Alone. Yeah. I don't know if it means to himself or something like that or what. Yeah. They just give alone here. Looks like it's. So the idea is the man's being alone is not good. In other words, you've got a predication here. Not good is the man's being alone.
The being of the man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I will make for him a help.
Yeah. Do we have negev?
Yeah. Like before. Him?
Before. Yeah, meet for him is what, you know, the King James says, or corresponding to him is what they've got in the interlinear.
As
almost got the idea of as before him is something that fits together with him, of course, you know, is corresponding to him or is as before him.
What did you say in Ezekiel? I guess towards sometimes the facing or
over against. Okay, that's what probably, that would fit here.
Of course. Corresponding to him, or like that, him.
So I will make a helper corresponding to him. Yeah, check that. That's
a root that's separate, like a branch or a sprout. Then it goes on to have lava.
Oh. Okay. Well, if it, if the Trinitarian argument was valid, it should be Yaqid here. Some of you know what I'm talking about. Okay. Verse 19 then. Eric? All right.
Vayitzer Yahweh Elohim min ha-adama kol chaya ha-sade v'et kol ol ha-shamayim v'yaba v'yabe el ha-daan l'yabiyu ma-yitara lo v'kol asher
Okay. To form.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
The Logos formed from the land or from dustwork, from the landwork?
Formed from the ground. It's Adama. It's a little tricky, but formed from Minah Adama, formed from the ground.
Yeah,
brought to the man to see what he would call it. Okay.
And everything which the man called to it. A living soul. That living soul. It was his name.
Okay, that's a little bit awkward even in English, but yeah. What and whatsoever, what he would. Call it, or in that which he might call it, in that which the man might call it, Each Living Soul, that was its name. That's kind of the idea. Let me see what they have here. And all which the man called it, Each Living Soul, that was its name.
The redundant pronoun coming before the thing itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, I guess you get that kara la, naming.
Yeah, you need that preposition on there. Mm-hmm. You could have perhaps just then, and everything which he would which he called every living soul, or the living soul, that was its name, but it's kind of like everything what he that which he called it, that is the living soul, that was its name. So you've got almost a parenthesis there with that nefesh.
Here in the people getting raised, they have the nefesh, chayah, DMT, and then they have a shortened
down
here that probably added.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, his opinion is that was added to clarify what you're referring to. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, are there any other questions on that verse? Yes, Doug? Okay, yikara lo means with kol asher, the kol asher there's in all which he might call it, the man, or you know, in other words, the man is the subject of it. So in all which the man might call it, each soul, each living soul, is explaining what the it refers to. That was its name. The who is the demonstrative, and then Shemo is its name. So in all that the man might call it, each living soul, or you know, nefesh chayat, each living soul, that was its name. I almost have to put an each in there to make it sense in English, although it's not there in Hebrew. You could say all that the man might call it, that is the living soul, that was its name. Although even the living soul isn't there, it's Anarthrous, you know, so a living soul. It's a little bit awkward in English. Well, any other questions? Verse 19. Verse 20 then. Tony, you want to take that?
I can't see the soul, but I haven't. I think I've never passed.
Okay. Price? Let's just try that. Now that you prepared for the next one.
Adam. Sevo, Bakal, Saba, Ema, Ula, Oak, Ashamayim, Ula, Ko, Kaya, Ashatadeh, Ula, Adam, Lo, Basa, Kater, Ba, Nen, Do.
Okay.
And Adam called the name of the beast, I guess it is. And the bow of the heaven and all the that creepers again.
Let's see. No, fowls of the heavens and to every beast of the field. Chayat Hasadeh. Yeah, beast of the field, living thing of the field.
And to the man not was found help, but got to be suitable.
Yeah, suitable to him. Yeah, suited to him. According to him, corresponding to him.
Same word.
Same one, yeah. Okay, good. And the man called names to all the cattle and to the birds of heaven, bird of the heavens, and to every beast of the field. But for man was not found a helper corresponding to him or suited for him, suitable for him. Okay. Questions. 21 then. Peter, is your next. Why
you spoke
It's all about, yeah.
Why his score, Bashar, Kav,
Kav,
and
okay.
Boy, that was a hard one.
Mm-hmm.
Fall.
No.
Is that a one nun?
To fall, yeah, it just means to fall. And it's a one nun, yeah, it's from Nafal.
I was hoping to be tall or something.
Yeah, almost. Well, let's see. This is a is it his feel causative? Yeah, made to fall. You know, Yahweh caused to fall deep sleep. So we ought to check that. Is that a, either a his feel or a PL? Looks like a his feel. That's my guess. So, yeah, with the Theri there, yeah, the one new one, and you got the Pathak under the Yod there. Yeah, I would think, I would guess it's Hifil. Hifil imperfect.
So, Tardimah is a deep sleep?
Yes. Hifil future, okay. That's what we got from one nun. So, imperfect, yeah, Hifil imperfect. Okay. Yeah, God caused to fall, Jehovah God caused to fall a deep sleep. Okay.
Upon the man, and he slept.
Yeah, and he slept. Mm-hmm.
And he took, is that from the cock?
Yep.
And he took one from the one of his.
They usually say ribs, one of his ribs, but it's kind of the side, from the side here, from the side of his body, I guess. So. We'll just go ahead with ribs for now. Took one of his ribs, or took one of his spare ribs.
Oh, no.
It's the opposite of pathak.
Close.
Yeah, close.
Close. Pathak.
Yeah, tachat is under, so it'd be under under it, to close up the flesh under it. Oh, flesh, it just means, yeah, it means flesh. Bakar is cattle, I think. So basar is flesh. Close up the flesh under it. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Just a prepositional suffix, or they call it just a.
Yeah, there was a suffix that was
made. Yeah. Yeah, the nun makes you wonder. You know, you can see the just the kamatse as a feminine ending, but it's almost with the nun there. So it's got to be something different. It's got to be a preposition involved or something like you say. I'm not sure what it would be. They give underneath is the translation of it. Close the flesh underneath. Might look that up. I'm curious about that. How they analyze that.
You know, this word, I looked it up a long time ago, Selah, and I just looked it up again. It doesn't give real detail on here, but one of them is it uses it as the ribs of a building. That was the very structure.
The structural frame,
and
yeah.
The idea, when I looked at it before, it had there was a connotation of the very base thing that was that formed the structure of it. Like you could almost say, and this is the thought that occurred to me, like of the, you know, of the genes or of the chromosome structure, and took of that and made.
Yeah, it would certainly fit typologically and fit biologically.
Mm-hmm.
That not necessarily was he taking a piece of his bone out of his body, but taking some flesh with a genetic DNA code. You know that. There's some interesting questions about that, too, as to Adam and Eve, and whether, if Eve was made from Adam, whether she had the identical genetic code. And there's one problem, of course, is that if she was female, at least in the X and Y chromosome, they'd have to be different. But it's possible that everything else they could have been exactly the same and still get all the variety in the human race, provided that Adam had a certain, I think somebody calculated if there's 6.7% of the genes that are heterozygous in human beings, and that would be more than sufficient to, you know, they figured up the possible different permutations, you know, in combination to that. It's incredible. Yeah, it's just incredible from what we do know. So in other words, there's no problem at all with Adam and Eve bringing forth all of the different human beings and all the genetic combinations. The genetic information for, you know, could easily have been there in that couple.
What
used
for those side chambers, if you remember?
Oh, yeah, those infamous side chambers. Yeah, ribs. Interesting. And if this be so, they may indicate some of the very structural integrity of the building, too. Do they seem to be a supporting structure in there?
Planks. Use the planks for wainscoting.
Around
the outside. Okay.
Interesting. Verse 22. And Doug, I guess, is next. Bana, and it means literally to build. This is very interesting because it's it's really unusual because catches the eye, because to describe what he's describing, making the woman, he says that he builded the woman. And it's very interesting because most of the time you see Yatsar or something like that. But if you take the typology of this for the church and so forth, you can see some very interesting things. But that literally, and Yahweh God built the rib, or the side, or the, you know, structure, whatever you have there. Which, yeah. Well, I'll let you go now.
Yeah,
he touched
on the man.
Into a woman, yeah. So he built it into a woman.
Nine.
That's really interesting, because that's the verb that's used for building a temple or building, you know, any kind of building or structure and so forth. Yeah. Oh, you bet. Right, he brought her to the man. Okay, he healed her, caused her to go, or he brought her. All right. And God builded, Yahweh Elohim builded the rib which had taken from the man into a woman and brought her unto the man. Okay, back to verse 23, John. This is now at last. That's the ha'am. Yeah. Ha'am means now or this time or something like that. And the zolt just means this, and you have to supply the is. This is now.
It's him, no, I'm not.
That means bone.
It's what?
Bone.
Oh.
This is now.
Now this time, bone of my bone.
Mm-hmm.
Bone from my bone.
Yeah, bone from my bones, plural, because the Bafa killed.
That's
true. Yeah, so this is now bone from my bones. And that may be where they got the idea of
the flesh from my flesh.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That lama there you might translate it for this
or for probably for this reason for this
time. Mm-hmm.
He called woman.
It's a passive verb form though, so you probably want to say she shall be called woman.
For this.
I think it's a nifal form. You got the dagesh there in the kaf. I'm pretty sure it's nifal.
Okay. She shall be called.
Better check it because they translated passive here.
Because from man, she was taken.
Mm-hmm. And this again, zolt again, from man, out of man, this has been taken, literally. So for this she shall be called woman because this has been taken out of man.
This is the subject.
Yeah, this would be the subject. This has been taken out of man.
It would be like this one that's feminine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This one has been taken.
Right.
That's a feminine passive too, right?
This has been taken. Now that would be interesting to look up with that shirt, the kibbutz there. It could perhaps be one of those call passives. Rather than an ifal, that's my guess. Someone ought to check that. Either that or a pu'al. But I don't see the dogation here for intensification, so it makes me wonder about it. Could be a pu'al.
How it works, why he called her, she would be called woman because she came out of man. I guess that's common say in the
east. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a feminine man. Yeah, just exactly. Maybe even a directional thing. Coming out.
Pu'al preterite.
Pu'al.
Third person.
Okay. It is a pu'al form then.
So it's, you don't even really need this, if you want to go on there.
No, that would be enough.
It's feminine. She has been taken.
Yeah. All you need is that. And the zolf is just adding emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
Just intensifier. Real demonstrative, it's a simple demonstrative function. Okay, 24, Eric.
Again, the Ensava, the Asav, Ish, Ev, Alu, Ev, Mo, the Sabak, the Ishto, the
you, the Vassar, yeah. Okay, are you? Mm-hmm.
That's the verse before that, from the man.
Mm-hmm.
Isha,
the Nishan,
in the
Rasam Kandachu,
and the Situation, and the Isha with a case, so it's from her man.
Oh, from her man.
She's
called
Isha because she's
uh-huh, interesting. Interesting.
Upon this,
that's good.
A man will abandon his father and his mother and cling, I guess, or
mm-hmm,
stick to.
So they give cling.
In his wife, and they will be to one flesh.
Mm-hmm. Now that's where you can even translate it, become, they will become one flesh, but they will be to one flesh.
Yeah.
You see, there's that idiom of haya plus the preposition. They will be to one flesh. Yeah, that'd be an interesting verb to look up. I'm not familiar with that one. Translated cling here.